Accession number 17349, Reel 4.
Mr. Bridge, Reel 4.
And in a single line of men moving through a trench system, I mean, although it was freezing outside, I was sweating, absolutely soaked with sweat, because we were carrying, well, we were in full service marching order, carrying all the things you needed. And when we finally got on the position and we put everybody in a firing position and time everything was sorted out, I was so soaked in sweat, which then began to freeze. So I took everything off, down to my, well, apart from my trousers, and with no dry gear to put on, I just got a blanket from my thing and just wrapped that around me, and I stayed the rest of the night with just a blanket around the top of me. And I remember the brigadier and the colonel came around to on an inspection, and he said, "What are you doing dressed like that?" I said, "Well, everything I had on was soaking wet." And colonel said, "Why are you dressed like that?" I said, "Well, everything was soaking wet, and I had just had to keep from freezing altogether. So I put this, just wrapped the blanket around me for quickness, and that was it." So there was no undue comment made about it. But just passed off.
What facilities did they give you for Christmas?
None, as far as I can recall.
No special Christmas dinner?
No, nothing whatsoever.
Did the Chinese do anything special for you for Christmas?
No.
You were telling me about them hanging Christmas presents in cars.
Oh, apart from that, yes.
Can you describe that, because we didn't put it on the tape?
Oh, well, after one morning on this particular position, I happened to, well, as it became daylight, I looked out and over the trenches, looking around, and something unfamiliar, probably, 50 yards below us, down the hill, were these fairly stout posts with a box, probably 2x2, sitting on top, which to me resembled a stand-up letterbox. So we went down, me and the other corporal, and just took these boxes off, brought them back in, and they were filled with writing paper, envelopes, Christmas cards, and other trinkets, which are all inscribed with Chinese People's Volunteers and the North Korean army or something. And of course we spread them around the section, just keep them if you want to or whatever. And then after that, a few days later, across no man's land and in front of the Chinese position, this black line appeared, which we couldn't understand even with binoculars from our position, because we're always on a hill position. And then you go down it to the valley, and the Chinese would be on the other hills, of course. And it turned out that during the night, an anti-tank ditch had been dug which was later recorded as being 10 foot wide, 10 foot deep, and went for whether it was miles, because it went out of our sight, you know, either side. So they must have had a labour force of thousands to dig that out by hand. Though it'd probably be easy digging because it was formerly paddy field, but even then, 10 foot deep was a hell of a lot of stuff to move. I did once see an aerial shot of it, taken by a spotter plane, and it was impressive.
What did you think of the enemy yourself?
Well, I would say they were pretty efficient. And quite resourceful. Fairly well armed. Yeah, they're quite resourceful, and as for training, I wouldn't like to give any indication of that, but they certainly knew how to dig and keep themselves concealed. And not having much contact or any contact with, well, live ones anyway. Apart, you know, I mean, face to face.
Was there any hatred of the enemy?
No, not particularly. I think we'd have acted if there'd been any nationality to us. They were just gooks, Chinese.
Did your unit suffer many casualties in the front line?
Yes, I think we're probably not as many as the first regiments there, like the Gloucesters and the Ulster Rifles, Middlesex and the Argyles. But I think we might have been, because we caught the last months of the war, where Chinese tried to get into an outstanding position where they would have more of a say in the peace talks at Panmunjom. That's why they were so keen on taking the Hook, because it was a prominent position, the highest ground for quite a while, or quite a way, and which presumably I've heard said was the castle to the gateway to Seoul, the main valley which would go all the way through to Seoul. But I think our casualties must have been higher than the regiments which were there in the middle years, like the Norfolk Regiment and two or three of the others. I can't say how many actually
now,
in the battalion.
Picking up this, your story, you've been in that same position in the Samichong Valley and then pulled back for rest and cleaning up. Did you go back into the front line after that?
No, I think we were there until we were we were pulled out into divisional rest, where then we could go on R&R leave to Incheon, where it was a rest camp, and possibly a week's leave to Tokyo.
Did you get that?
I got to Tokyo, yes.
What would you do in Tokyo?
Drink. Do a bit of sightseeing, shows, cinemas,
What did the attitude of the Japanese seem to be toward you?
Get as much money as they could offer you, which included every known angle you could think of. Because you're only there, you only had a certain amount of money. I don't think you could go there. You weren't eligible to go there unless you had at least £50, I think, to spend. Because some people are going there and resorting to crime, you know, because it's a very high cost of living even then there.
So when were you in the hook?
This was after we came out of divisional rest.
Can you tell me about going into the hook and what happened?
Well, when we knew we were going on the hook, I mean, then a lot of people began to get apprehensive because it was known as a fairly active area. We'd seen the battle the Black Watch had because we were just about a mile up the valley when they were attacked, and we could see all this activity because it took place during the night. And I'll say it was so well, it was interesting, but when we knew we were going on, then some people were very apprehensive, and when we moved up to the hook, for some reason or other, our company became the one to actually hold the hook, B Company. And as it happened, our platoon were right on the edge, on the front edge. And our three platoon sections, one down one side, one in the front, and one come up the other side, and then I believe it was C Company took over from the rest, you know. So they're a little bit more behind, but we were actually in the main area for, I think we were there for about 10 days. And it was reasonably quiet, all right. There was shell fire every day onto it, and occasional sniping, but until we'd been there for about a week, when we came under fairly fierce attack, and then 2 days later we were moved off because it was very restricted on there. I mean, you couldn't move anywhere apart from the trenches, and although we had small tunnels to live in, it was very basic even for Korea.
What form did this very fierce attack take?
Well, we'd been warned that a Chinese, well, from what I can recall, they said a new Chinese army is coming up, and I believe it's the 40th. Now, how many men they regard as an army, I don't know, but they'd, apparently the Americans had intercepted a radio message. So they're on the way, and they'll be there on this certain date. I believe it was May, possibly about the 20th, I think. And we were warned that an attack would come in this night, and apart from through, well, quite a bit of shell fire, nothing happened. Then apparently the Chinese had marched for so long, they couldn't attack that night, so it would be the following night. And we were warned again that this attack would come in on this night, and of course we all stood to it. Ammunition all piled up, and as the dusk came in, and at about 10 minutes before it was completely dark, all the crickets, frogs, and all the noise in the valley down below and round you, Paddy, went deathly quiet. There wasn't a sound, you couldn't hear anything. I put this down to whether all these insects and creatures detected some mass movement or something, I don't know, but I tell you, I remarked to the chap who was with me where we had two brain guns, he said, you can't hear a sound, there was nothing, absolutely nothing. And then I could hear a shell coming from our back area, right above us, because you can hear a shell travelling through the air on a quiet night. And right above us, it burst, and down came a large parachute flare. And then, as I got within about 100 feet, I should think, from the ground, two or three more came over, and then all hell let loose. We came under a terrific barrage, and at the same time, our divisional artillery opened up, firing a defensive barrage over the top of us with the airburst shells, you know, to sweep everything away which might be in or around our area. So we were under two lots of artillery fire, but all the forward parts of the frontline trench was covered in, had overhead cover. And we were in individual fire posts, which were also heavily covered in, you know, which had been built by the engineers. So overhead cover was very secure, apart from probably a direct hit from a fairly heavy shell. And I'll say the shell fire was creating that much smoke and dust. You just couldn't hear anything by this continual exploding of shells, which was continuous. It's one complete burst of noise. There's no interval. And I kept looking out, and shrapnel was even coming through the slit, which was probably, I don't know, about 4 foot wide by about a foot in depth. Shrapnel was whirring in, you know, and striking the roof and that. And of course, we had to keep down, and plus the entrance, which just went into the trench here, it was coming in sideways, both ways, and it was hazardous just to look up and look out, and all I could see was smoke and dust and everything. And then I heard machine gun fire, so I thought, well, no good staying here with all this ammunition without doing something. And we couldn't say whether the Chinese were on us or coming up towards or what. So I fired several magazines in a wide burst and everything. And this attack finally went off. It seemed about an hour, maybe longer, but the shell fire lessened off, and the other forward section, they reported that they couldn't see anything either. They just fired blindly into all the dust and smoke and everything. All I know is I had a tremendous thirst. Water bottles hadn't been filled for quite a while. Mine was half full with, well, very stale water, and so was the other chap. And we both emptied them because the mouth was so parched with all this dust and fumes. Anyway, The platoon sergeant came around and said, "Are you all right? Any casualties and all that?" And I said, "No." I said, "We're okay." And the area, all the trenches were not obliterated, but very badly damaged. And as we were shelled continuously during the night, but nothing like that, however long it took, that first half hour or hour. Anyway, in the morning we started to, or as it got light, start to clear up. And looking on the tops of the trench behind us, I could see plenty of bodies, Chinese bodies. So they must have been on the top and been caught by airburst shell fire, because we didn't even know they were there. But the observation officer with the artillery must have known what was going to happen and had ordered the parachute flares, you know, to light up the whole area and then bring down the artillery. And I'll say that more or less completed. And then I think 2 days later, they relieved us with the D Company.
So what had happened then was the Chinese had launched a ground attack.
Yeah.
And the shell fire you experienced was our shell fire.
Well, it was both. I mean, the Chinese were, apparently the Chinese run through their own barrage. Because they know they're keeping our heads down and not be able to shoot, because then they would send up their men, their own men, into this barrage, even if they sustained casualties, which they could well afford. They had plenty of men to keep pushing up, and plus our barrage, which was not hitting our positions, but exploding, I forget what, probably 20 or 30 feet above, which then rained down all there. Well, it wasn't shrapnel, but fragments, you know. And that's probably why we didn't come into contact. Whether they were in our trenches, I know in parts of the trench which we're digging out, we come across several bodies in the bottom.
So some of the Chinese infantrymen got into your trenches?
Yeah. But they didn't get into our actual pits, because, as I say, the the front section, which probably went about 50 yards, because I don't know if you know the shape of the hook, it wasn't a very big area. The actual front part would be, as I say, about 50 yards, and the trench ran straight across. And it was firmly covered in with possibly four firing pits, you know. And that would just about be it. You know, for...
And what was the date of this attack?
I think it... Well, it would be about the 25th of May, 24th, 25th, I don't know.
53,
yeah.
Whilst you were in those trenches for that hour or so, under fire, were people's nerves shattered?
Well, I really can't say, but... because I was in this particular firing pit where we had two Bren guns and plenty of grenades and everything. And you're out of contact with the next pit, would be, which could be, what, 20, 20 yards away. before there'd be another pit with two or three men in.
So you were in the pit with two others?
Just one other.
What was his name? Doesn't matter.
Newson, Ginger Newson.
But what were your nerves like?
Well, I was a bit apprehensive of getting something coming in the doorway, because the doorway was exposed. And all I was worried about, any minute a Chinese was going to come up to the slit and fire into it or throw a grenade in, and you couldn't see anything. And I was darting from the front to the back to see if anybody would be coming along the trench, but as I said, there's so much dust and smoke you couldn't see anyway. I did think at the time that when I first went into the army, after you take a written test and medical, they said, as you're going in as a regular soldier and you got fairly decent standard of education, you can go into the Army Service Corps Engineers, REME, but I plumped for the Royal Norfolk Regiment because I couldn't get into the Paras straight away. Plus, my brother was killed in the Norfolk Regiment during the war.
And, so you weren't shattered by this attack?
No, I wasn't. And I don't think Ginger Newson was either, although he didn't smoke, and he said, when I lit up a cigarette, when it was quieting down, he said, I think I'll try one of them. But I don't think we were scared. We were a bit apprehensive, as I say, about suddenly being confronted or having a mob of Chinese coming down on us. I mean, for some reason, we just couldn't see anything. But I did think at the time, I thought perhaps I should have gone into one of the service corps or something, but that soon passed over.
But once the artillery attack had finished, would you have still been able to fight? If you'd have had to hands on fighting with the Chinese?
Definitely.
And then you found dead Chinese bodies in your
in the morning when we began to clean up. And then there's one part of the trench was at least half filled in. Well, we were digging this out because to go up this mound of earth, you then head and shoulders over the trench, which was fairly dangerous. So we're just digging this out, throwing it on, come across these bodies which had been killed by shellfire. Presumably, anyway.
What type of equipment and weapons did they have?
They were well armed. We were told that when we first got to Korea that they would come in hordes and have one rifle between, say, five men, and as he got killed, the next man would pick it up. But all these bodies had burp guns, you know, the semi-automatic. Yeah, they all had the burp guns and plenty of stick grenades. Leather equipment, as far as I can determine. Webbing. Instead of our webbing, they had leather.